Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Gopijana Vallabha Girivara Dhari. Jaya Gopijana Vallabha Girivara Dhari. Nandana Braja Janaranjana Vasura Nandana Braja Janaranjana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Yamuna Chiravana Chari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari.
Jaya Om Vishnupad Paramahamsa Parivrajata Acharya. Astotra Sata Shri Srimad's Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. I like it open, but this is probably a democratic decision.
Show hands, open.
I find the cool fall temperatures in Florida to be very pleasing.
Okay.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Narayanam Namaskritya Naram Chaiva Narottamam Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam Tato Jayam Udirayat Nasta Prayeshva Bhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavat Yutama Shloke Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtaki. Our reading this morning from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 3, Verse 3. Thank you. All right. Oh my goodness. I practiced this last night, but I'm still going to get it wrong. Samahuta Bhishmaka Kanyaya Ye. Shriya Savarnena Bubusaya Isam. Gandharva Vritya Misatam Svabhagam. Jare Padam Urni Dadatsu Parnaha. Samahuta Bhishmaka Kanyaya Ye. Shriya Savarnena Bubusaya Isam. Gandharva Vritya Misatam Svabhagam. Jare Padam Murni Dadatsu Parnaha.
Samahuta Bhishmaka Kanyaya Ye.
Samadhisma. Shriya Savarnena Babusaya Isam Gandharva Vritya Misatam Svabhagam Jare Padam Murni Dadat Suparna Kabishmaka Kanyaya Ye Shriya Savarnena Bubusaya Isam Gandharva Vritya Misakam Svabhagam Jare Padam Murni Dadat Suparnaha Samahuta Bhishmaka Kanyaya Ye Shriya Savarnena Bubusaya Isam Gandharva Vritya Misatam Svabhagam Jare Padam Murni Dadat Suparnaha Samahuta Bhishmaka Kanyaya Ye Shriya Savarnena Bubusaya Isam Gandharva Vritya Misatam Svabhagam Jare Padam Murni Dadat Suparnaha Samahuta Bhishmaka Kanyaya Ye Padamurni dadat suparna Samahuta invited Bhishmaka I didn't say that right Bhishmaka the king of Bhishmak Kanyaya by the daughter yay
all those
I just want to point out that that's Kanyaya that's not Kanye kids Shriya,
fortune.
Savarnena,
by a similar sequence.
Bubusaya,
expected to be so.
Esam,
of them.
Gandharva,
in marrying.
Vritya,
by such a custom.
Mishatam,
carrying so.
Svabhagam,
own share.
Njare,
took away.
Padam,
feet.
Murni,
on the head.
Dadat,
placed.
Suparna,
Garuda.
Translation.
Attracted by the beauty and fortune of Rukmini, the daughter of King Bhishmaka,
many great princes and kings assembled to marry her. But Lord Krishna, stepping over the other hopeful candidates, carried her away as his own share, as Garuda carried away nectar.
Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada.
Princess Rukmini, the daughter of King Bhishmaka, was actually as attractive as fortune itself because she was as valuable as gold both in color and in value. Since the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, is the property of the Supreme Lord, Rukmini was actually meant for Lord Krishna. But Shishupal was selected as her bridegroom by Rukmini's elder brother, although King Bhishmaka wanted his daughter to marry Krishna. Rukmini invited Krishna to take her away from the clutches of Shishupal. So when the bridegroom, Shishupal, came there with his party with the desire to marry Rukmini, Krishna all of a sudden swept her from the scene, stepping over the heads of all the princes there, just as Garuda carried away nectar from the hands of the demons. This incident will be clearly explained in the 10th canto. Om Anjana Timirandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitamena Tasmai Shri Gurve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Shtapitam Nena Dutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Virati Svahaparantikam Vanchakalpa Trivishcha Kripa Sindhidevicha Petitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namonanda Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaurabhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram Hare Ram 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 Hare Hare. So I made notes again. I feel like this is such a This is generally, I find, a difficult place to speak, because even when there aren't 50 or 60 or 70 kids here, there's so many varying demographics or various demographics in our community here that it's difficult to know what audience to address. And then when you add the kids in here, it becomes even more difficult, because there's, you know, what is appropriate for children? What do children need to hear? What do children need to hear that is also beneficial for adults? So I've forgone my normal practice of just hopping up somewhere and giving a lecture and made some notes. And the first thing is to put this all in context for the kids especially, but I know many of you are at the Bhagavatam class daily as Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Chant this before the Bhagavatam class. The more literal translation of this verse is to just hear from the Bhagavatam Nityam Seva. So Nityam can mean eternal, but Nityam can also mean regular. So as a regular devotional service, we should hear from the Bhagavatam. But Prabhupada translated this as by attending classes in the Bhagavatam, which is, I think, an important distinction, because motivating yourself to go to the lecture and sit in the lecture is itself an act of devotional service. We are sacrificing our time in the service of hearing about the glories of the Lord. And so that is auspicious, even if it's boring or frustrating, or you don't understand what the person's saying, or the person's speaking too fast. Just the sacrifice, the act of going to hear from the Bhagavatam is glorious and beneficial for the whole world. So what's going on here? We just heard, I read this verse and I'm like, well, that's not so much to go on, is it? But then, like everything in the Bhagavatam, because the Bhagavatam is not different from Krishna himself, if you pull on any one thread anywhere, you can get the whole Krishna. But what's going on here right now in the Bhagavatam? We're reading about the journeys of Vidura, who was the brother of Pandu and Dhritarashtra, who, after the battlefield of Kurukshetra, had some very sharp words for Dhritarashtra. He called him out on a lot of nonsense, both interpersonal nonsense and managerial nonsense. Dhritarashtra's sycophants didn't like that. And one of them called Vidura the son of a, what was it? I wrote it down here. The son of a kept mistress. He said, who are you to come in here and criticize the former king? You're nothing but the son of a kept mistress, is how Prabhupada translated this. And Vidura didn't like that. He's like, all right, well, if that's what you have to say about me, I am out of here. And he left. He went on a pilgrimage. And his pilgrimage is described in some detail in the first and second chapters of the third canto. He went first to a place called Prabhas, which I could not actually locate on a map. But by doing a little bit of research, might be in what is modern-day Nepal. I don't know. I'll get to that in a moment. Gujarat. Where? Gujarat. Yes, thank you. I did actually find it. Okay, but it said it was in Gujarat, but then he said he went west to the river Sarasvati, which is taken to be in the north, which is why I placed it in Nepal. But you are right. I did find that it was in Gujarat. Thank you. Anyway, he went to the place of Prabhas where he learned about the death of the Yadu dynasty. He continued on his pilgrimage. Then it says he went west to the river Sarasvati, where there are 11 different places of pilgrimage that he visited. And I thought this was an interesting point, that people often go to places of pilgrimage along rivers. And we often discuss in devotional circles about what is a principle of devotional service and what is a detail of devotional service. And rivers in general are places of pilgrimage. And we have, even in the United States of America or in North America, we have many places that are along rivers that are considered places of pilgrimage. But people take these places of pilgrimage in a mundane sense. We've established national parks there, and people can drive there. And many times they will take bath in the river. But it's described that if somebody is going only to these places of pilgrimage to take bath in the river and not hear from the devotees of the Lord or to hear about the transcendental pastimes of the Lord, then these are like places of pilgrimage for crows. And if you go to a national park at one of these holy places, and I've been to many of them, I've been blessed to have gone to many of them, if you stay in the parking lot and you listen to the conversations of the people who are visiting these places, this is like a place of pilgrimage to crows. But it is a place of pilgrimage nonetheless. But Vidura did not only go to these places of pilgrimage to bathe in the rivers, he also visited the many temples of Vishnu that were established along the way. And it's also described that he passed by many wealthy places. He passed by places of great opulence, but he kept moving on. He didn't stay in one of them. He didn't do any window shopping or find a nice dinner, find a nice place to get a vegan dinner or vegetarian dinner. It's explained that he traveled the world without seeing others for a long time. He was all alone. And because of this, he actually gained the devotional qualification to have an audience with Uddhava, who is a great devotee of the Lord. Uddhava is attained the form of the state of liberation that he has the same bodily features as the Lord. And Krishna deputed, Krishna had so much faith and so much trust in Uddhava that Krishna deputed Uddhava to go check on the gopis in Vrindavan after Krishna left them. So Krishna left the gopis in Vrindavan in a truly heartbreaking tale that I shall not repeat right now. But Krishna never forgot the gopis in Vrindavan. Although the gopis felt heartbroken that Krishna's presence had left them, they were in a state of catatonic state. They were like frozen in anguish over losing Krishna. And Krishna knew this. So Krishna sent Uddhava to go check on them. And because Vidura had wandered the world as a pilgrim, and not as a tourist, but as a pilgrim, he gained the devotional qualification to have an audience with Uddhava. And what we're hearing now is Uddhava's descriptions of pastimes of Vidura. When Vidura finally met Uddhava on the banks of the Yamuna, and it's not explained where along the Yamuna he met him. It could have been in the mountains. He was just in the river Sarasvati. It could have been closer to the metropolises that are along the Yamuna or were along the Yamuna at that time. But Vidura met Uddhava at the banks of the Yamuna, and he asked him many questions about the state of his family. And it's interesting that at the end of the second canto, after Maharaj Parikshit, who is in the same family, heard about the wonderful cosmic manifestation in the universal form of the Lord, and Sarga and Visarga, the principles of the cosmic manifestation, and the principles of the secondary creation within the universe, Vidura abruptly changed the subject. He didn't even comment on anything that Sukadeva Goswami had explained to him about the universal form. He said, "What happened to my uncle Vidura?" And so Sukadeva Goswami quickly changed the topic. And Vidura met Uddhava and inquired about the health of his family. And Uddhava answered the question. First, he began with some philosophical discourse about the nature of the Supreme Lord. And then he started to get into the details of what happened to his family. And Vidura asked questions that were actually in quite some detail. He asked about very specific family members. And this went on for many, many verses in the first chapter of this canto. And then finally, Uddhava came to narrating the pastimes of Krishna. And this went on through much of the second chapter of the third canto. And now in the beginning of the third canto, in the beginning of the third chapter of the third canto, Uddhava has switched from narrating a summary of Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan. He brought Krishna to Mathura. And now he's fast forwarded to Krishna kidnapping Rukmini. And I found what was really interesting here is that in the just the outline of Krishna's life, so in the previous verse, and I know many of you heard the previous verse yesterday, but I do want to repeat the previous verse for the children here. Because before the Lord kidnapped Rukmini, who's described here as being as valuable as gold, both in beauty and in worth, so she wasn't only physically beautiful, she had intrinsic worth beyond her beauty that was as valuable as gold. But before Krishna did this, the Lord learned all the Vedas with their different branches simply by hearing them once from his teacher, Sandipani Muni, whom he rewarded by bringing back his dead son from the region of Yamaloka. So the Lord himself went to school, and he learned all of the branches of the Vedas. Not only the Vedas, but their limbs, also the Vedangas. He learned it all, both material and spiritual knowledge. And how did he learn it? By hearing it once from his teacher. Thank you, Puru. So Puru heard it once, and he learned it. The rest of these kids, it's a work in progress. We're working on it. So this is remarkable, that even Krishna, who already knows everything, played the role of a student for the sake of setting an example as to how one should live a godly life on this earth. And then what did he do after he finished his studies? He got married. Kidnapped Rukmini. And this is described here that so marriage is also a major milestone. So finishing school is a major milestone in one's life. Getting married is another major milestone in one's life. And these things should go in a natural progressing order. So Krishna was a brahmachari for a long time, then he got married. And not only did he get married, he married a lot of queens. But Rukmini was the first one and the principal one. And it's described here that Krishna's marriage to Rukmini was of the Gandharva sort. And that means the family of the future groom swept in and took the bride from a different family. And this is described here in the Vedas. But this was consensual. Rukmini, of course, wanted Krishna to come kidnap her. And Rukmini's father also wanted her to come kidnap her. So it wasn't kidnapping by force. It was more of a rescue, one could say. The kidnapping by force is a different kind of marriage. This is a Rakshasa marriage, where the bride is forced against her will to marry into a different family. And there are different types of marriages described in the Vedas. And the topic of marriage is, of course, ever-present and ever-prescient, which means important and relevant. In the minds of society. Right in the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is speaking about the importance of marriage in any well-ordered and civil society. And he says that marriage that is engaged in according to religious principles is holy and sacred, and marriage that is engaged in for the purposes of sense gratification is simply an unnecessary disturbance in our society. And this is always a topic. This is a major political topic in our time also. So people talk about, would somebody mind getting me a little cup of water? I'm starting to lose my voice. Thank you. Excuse me. Where was I? Oh, yeah, people talk about marriage equality versus traditional marriage values. And in a secular society that we live in a secular society means that our society is governed by laws that are mutually agreed upon, divorced from any explicit religious context. In a secular society, it's very difficult to define what a marriage should be, and we expect everybody to be treated equally under the law. And so that opens up a lot of gray area for discussion. What is right? What is freedom? Who has the right to be free? Things like this. Thank you very much. Excuse me. And so this opens up society to many different kinds of marriages. And in the Vedas, we see also there are described many different kinds of marriages. If we look historically at what is really traditional marriage or traditional family values, what we usually see is some kind of financial and or political arrangement between two families. And in this case, both the bride and the groom are often pawns of their parents' ambitions, let's say. And so this is one, so, But the parents' ambitions aren't always nefarious. Most of the time, I would say, parents have their children's best interests in heart, and they want their children to be set up in a stable situation where they're going to be loved and cared for and be able to give love and caring also to their offspring. Thank you, Theta. And so it's one traditional way that marriages are made is that two families will decide our son and our daughter are a good match for each other and let us join them in a union and expand our family in this way. And by expanding our family, we expand our wealth and we expand our influence. We provide shelter for more and more living entities and so on and so forth. Other types of marriages are just the bride and the groom choose each other, right? In the modern world, we call this dating. You know, I'm going to go search for the person that I think is going to be a good match for me. And this is difficult because when people start doing this, they usually don't have a lot of experience in the world. And so there's a lot of exploration and there's a lot of fumbling about. There's a lot of mistakes made. And if there's not a rigid framework for this to operate in, there's also a lot of heartbreak and agony and anguish and things like, oh my God, people leave and then it's a mess, drama, and so on and so forth. We also see that in a relationship, you know, what might attract us to another person initially might not last, especially if what is attracting us to somebody is based on sensual input, what they look like, what they smell like, what they sound like when they speak and all these things. And we often find that with our senses, that what is attractive to our eyes is not necessarily attractive to our sense of touch, or what is attractive to our sense of touch is not always attractive to our ears. Or what might sound pleasant might not smell very good. And so it's very difficult to find the perfect combination of things that will satisfy all of my senses all the time. So there has to be something deeper in the relationship for it to work. And again, Rukmini is described here as being, as valuable as gold, both in her appearance and in her worth. And so there's something deeper than this in the relationship that causes it to last a long time. And we see that in the modern society, relationships simply don't last because the foundation of them is sense gratification. How can this person gratify my senses, right? You know, what do I need to do to get this person to gratify my senses? In so many different ways, gross and subtle ways. So, but that's not marriage in a Vedic context. And marriage in a Vedic context is to increase the pool of devotees, right? It's to make new devotees. We spend so much time going on the street trying to get people to convert to, our religion here. But we can also make devotees organically. And if the father and the mother are on the same page devotionally and have a proper understanding of what the purpose of their union is, we see that there are so many beautiful families being raised here in Alachua with this in mind. So I think because the kids need to go to school and maybe there's some questions, did I have another point? Yeah, so the last point I want to make is that, first of all, there are two last points I want to make. First of all, Vidura gained his devotional qualification by very deep self-reflection. He wandered the earth alone for a long time. But anybody who spent some time alone wandering the earth will know that you are actually never alone in this world. Krishna is always with you. And the more time we can spend reflecting on the nature of our own existence, for example, yesterday, let's say to the adults in the room here, yesterday I sprang a little bit of a pop quiz on our eighth graders. They knew they had a practical test of some martial arts. By the way, martial arts was one of the Vedangas that Krishna studied. And we know this, Krishna won a wrestling match against all of the best wrestlers in the world when he went to Mathura. So they had a little test in martial arts, which they thought was going to be a practical test. But before they began the test, and this is a little foreshadowing for you seventh graders now, I asked them to write a one-paragraph reflection of what they learned doing martial arts and how is it valuable in their life. And they were freaking out, like, oh my God, I don't know what to do. I don't know, what is this all about? But I read all yours last night, and they were all really great. And so self-reflection, this is called svadhyaya. This is one of the niyamas of the yoga system, is that being introspective and trying to understand the nature of the self and the purpose of your existence is a key function of human life. And this requires training. Vidura was already advanced in years when he had done this. He became a vanaprastha. So the difference between a brahmachari and a vanaprastha is that a brahmachari is getting training in sense control. A vanaprastha is somebody who knows what they're doing and is practicing sense control in preparation for taking sannyas. And so Vidura was a vanaprastha, and he traveled the world alone without seeing others. And this led to his devotional qualification to hear from Uddhava's, is that this was this sincere endeavor for self-realization. That's one point. The second point, for those of you who are still taking notes, which I can see is none of you. All right. Oh, some of you over there, thank you. Of course, the girls are all taking notes, and the boys are not. The second point is that Krishna showed with his own life the process of varnashram, and it's important to follow the stages of life, how they're laid out. You know, so Krishna first finished his studies, then he got married. That's the order that we see things happening here in the Bhagavad Gita. So now I'll stop. I know that these students are going to get up and leave here in a moment, but I have a few more minutes if anybody wants to ask a question or make a comment. Thank you very much for listening. Don't do that. It's not necessary. That is not necessary. You should do that after my biology lectures. Yeah. Yes, Father Kirtan. Jaggi Prabhu.
Thank you, Pracharananda Prabhu, for your wonderful class. You mentioned Krishna and Balaram learning from Sandipani Muni.
Yeah.
And I wanted to share with everyone, I thought that was a wonderful point from the Krishna book. Srila Prabhupada writes how after hearing only once from their teacher, Krishna and Balaram learned all the arts and sciences.
Yeah.
They learned all the necessary arts and sciences required in human society. During the daytime, they took lessons on a subject from the teacher, and by nightfall, they were expert in that department of knowledge. First of all, they learned how to sing.
Haribo!
How to compose songs and how to recognize the different tunes. They learned how to dance and how to...
Oh, extra horrible.
And how to dance to the rhythm of melody and different songs. And how to follow them by beating different kinds of drums. And I just wanted to point out how wonderful Vishwambhar Prabhu was playing the mridanga, and that everyone could see that Vishwambhar Prabhu was playing such wonderful mridanga for your Jai Radha Madhava.
Yeah.
And I wanted to appreciate that and encourage everyone to appreciate hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam the way you were saying.
Jai. Thank you so much for pulling that up. On the spot. All of the arts and sciences. What were they? Singing, dancing, and beating the drum. Are you bold? Anybody else? Anyone else? Yes, that was also a point that I had. Thank you. That was also a point. Prabhu said that the students gave Guru Dakshin, or Krishna as a student gave Guru Dakshin, and he did not give any ordinary Guru Dakshin. He went to hell to bring his teacher's kids back from the realm of Yamaraj. I don't know if it was really hell, but he went to the realm of Yamaraj. It's described. That sounds like hell to me. I don't know. And so I know that... you know, at Banner we have four guiding principles that students are supposed to follow: integrity, self-control, gratitude, and I'm going to forget the last one. Respect. Yes, thank you. Your teachers, all of your teachers, work very hard for you with very little material gain out of it, and we do it because we love you, and we do it because we love Krishna. So. All we really look for in return is a little bit of gratitude. And that feeds us for a long time. And I know gratitude is not the forte of teenagers and adolescents and whatnot, but a little bit of gratitude goes a long, long way in the lives of your teachers. So thank you for reminding me to make this point. All right. All right. It's Khitri and Halava time, folks. Thank you very much.